Hey, welcome back to Good Growing with the Garden Gal. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jillian Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And she's the Garden Gal. And during this segment, we're going to be talking about food safety for gardeners. Why is food safety so important, Teresa?
We spend all this time growing food for ourselves, and we want it to be nutritious and delicious. But we still have to be aware that in a growing environment, there are things that can cause illness, can make you sick. So we want to make sure that we handle our produce in a way that contributes to our health and not takes away from it in some unintended manner.
And so what are some different precautions that we need to take?
Probably the most important one is when you're dealing with compost and manure, especially if either the compost uses manure as one of its products. There are pathogens like E. coli that can live in manure, and we want to handle it in such a way that we're not transferring that bacteria into the food that we want to eat. And time is our friend with relation to that particular bug. The guidelines for food safety say that if you're going to use manure, it should be worked into the soil 4 months ahead of harvesting that crop that
really?
You want to eat. Yeah.
So you're talking about the springtime then pretty
right.
much.
Or even the fall before. And that's especially important for a food that you might eat raw, such as a melon or lettuce or onion, any of your salad crops. If it's a food that you're always going to eat cooked, such as winter squash, you know, it's not so much of a concern because heat will kill that E. coli. But you do want to make sure that if you're going to use manure, you apply it at least four months prior to harvest.
Teresa, you're talking about manure. A lot of people use cow manure, obviously, because mm-hmm. we have just a prolific amount of cows in our region here. Is there a difference between cow manure, horse manure, chicken manure, pig manure? Mm-hmm. Are some of it hotter than some of the others and cause different reactions in the soil, or is it pretty much one-all catch-all?
Well, they all have components of nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium. And it's that nitrogen that you're thinking of that can burn a crop. It's not so much a food safety issue as a crop growing issue. When we talk about manure being hot, what we're talking about is that nitrogen being in ammonia form. And it's that ammonia that can kind of burn the plant. So what we want to do is we want to take that nitrogen and convert it into a more stable form, such as nitrate or nitrite, that's not going to burn the plant. And that, again, can happen through time. If you combine it with something like straw that has a lot of carbon, that nitrogen and carbon kind of work together to become a more stable form. And you won't burn your plants if you use aged manure. It's fresh manure that's a problem. And chicken manure, more than anything else, is the one that we think about as being hot. Basically, if there's a smell of ammonia coming off the manure, it's hot. And you want to bury that if you're going to apply it to a crop. And another reason to bury it is because you capture that nitrogen and it doesn't just go off into the atmosphere if you've got it buried in the soil.
Now, we're talking about the manure, and you're talking about the high nitrogen levels. You want to use old manure then is what basically you're saying in each one of these cases.
Well, only if you're going to, not necessarily, because fresh manure has the highest nitrogen content, which you might want, but you need to bury that in the soil and then wait a couple weeks before you plant.
Okay, what about the weed varieties that the manures bring in a lot of times? All of a sudden, I know when we put manure on our garden, say in the fall, and you know work it in the garden, and then mm-hmm. the springtime, all of a sudden all this new wheat crop, you know, comes up, and I'm saying, where'd all those weeds come from? And so how can you help that not to happen?
Well, the weed content of manure is highly dependent on the feeding pattern of the animal that it came from. Does it graze in a pasture where they're going to be eating a lot of weed seeds? Yes, then you're going to have a lot of weed problem. One way to help with that is if you hot compost that manure, it will kill many weed seeds, not all, but it will kill a lot of the weed
seeds.
Okay,
explain that.
Okay. Hot composting is when you have a nice balance between high nitrogen sources, such as fresh animal manure, and carbon sources, such as straw, chopped leaves. And you mix those together with a little bit of moisture, keep the air moving, and the temperature of that compost pile can get well over 130 degrees. It can get up to 160 degrees. So you can monitor that. They make special thermometers with very long probes on them where you can take the temperature of your compost and do it once a day. When you start to see that compost temperature fall, get out there and turn the pile. And that will basically reheat the compost pile. And if you do that for a couple of weeks, keep that compost pile turned so hot processes are happening in it, it will kill most of your weed seeds.
Oh, that's a great thing to know as you go through there. Now, Teresa, if purchasing compost, is it always wise to talk to the person you're purchasing the compost from to see, you know, what kind of, you know, what area, what region, the different things about that compost and how it was made? That's a funny picture in my mind, how it was made. I just plop.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about, you know, living on a farm, and we have a nice big manure pit, but we have people calling us all the time, you know, can we come get a truckload of manure for our garden? Well, it's right out of the barnyard. I mean, you know, and they scoop it up and put it in the back of the truck, and they take it. But you're right. Usually it's before they plant.
Right. You don't want to apply manure after you've got the crop planted. Yeah, that's not good. In terms of, I like to know something about the compost I buy, because then I know, do I have to handle this with the same safety precautions as I would manure? Or has it been hot composted through those processes where it's okay to put on where I'm going to plant lettuce? And we have composting businesses in Michigan. We're very fortunate that take the time and the care to go through and make sure that the manure is thoroughly gone through the hot composting process, and it's easier to use in the sense that you don't have to be quite as cautious about using it.
Like Dairy Dew.
That's good example. Yeah.
You know, and they advertise a lot, and I'm thinking that was a good name.
And I've been out to their operation, and I've seen their compost turner. I've seen their logs where they take the temperature. Mm. And that's the kind of example that I'm talking about, somebody who's taking the time and the effort to make sure their product has gone all the way through that hot composting process.
Now, we're talking about food safety. Should you always be wearing gloves when you're dealing with this?
With compost, not necessarily. With manure, you want to make sure you wash your hands really well. Yeah, I would wear gloves and wash your hands really well, too.
Okay. Now, what about washing your produce, you know, after you harvest it?
You know, George, there's something I came across a few years ago that I hadn't heard before, and that is that the temperature of the wash water matters. Mm-hmm. Some of the universities have done a study and found that if you use water that is more than 10 degrees colder than the produce that you're washing, it can actually drive microorganisms into the produce. Like, really? Let's say you had a little aged manure that you would put in your soil, and you harvested it, your melon, and your melon has some of that on its rind. Well, you don't want to have that go in, anything that's in that to go into your melon. So make sure your wash water is no more than 10 degrees colder than your produce.
And how do you do that? Just, I mean, you can touch, you know, how
warm the melon is. Like if you harvest the melon and it's warm, maybe you want that melon to cool down a little bit before you wash it, or maybe you want to use warm water to wash the melon. You don't need any specialty products. Water is fine. Water in and of itself is good.
Is that, I mean, because the pesticides can get on your plants, and that's one of the things I've been told, one reason you need to really wash is because if there's been pesticides, you know, trying to get rid of insects, and they've sprayed something, you need more than just water to clean off the plants. Is that true?
Well, the challenge with pesticides is that they can actually go into the plant. So no amount of washing is going to get that pesticide out of there.
Oh, okay.
So that's a whole nother thing to be aware of. Is it a pesticide that just stays on the surface, or did the plant absorb that pesticide? And if the plant has absorbed it, you can't get it off. If it's just on the surface, then maybe a little soap with your water would be helpful.
So how would you know if it's...
You'd have to talk to the grower. Okay. If you just go to the grocery store, you simply wouldn't know.
Okay. So farmers markets, the next door neighbor, somebody like that you're purchasing these things from?
It's great if you can talk to the grower and find out what growing practices they used.
Hey, I'm George Corliss, and I've got Jelaine Fenner here with me in the studios along with Teresa Williams. Teresa, tell us a little bit about yourself again to refresh people's memory.
I work for the Wexford Conservation District, and as part of that work, we try to get out to people ways that they can be good stewards of all their natural resources, soil, water, air, animals. And one of the things that brought me to that work is for 10 years I ran an organic mixed fruit, vegetable, and poultry farm.
What kind of fruits did you handle?
All the melons and strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, rhubarb, apples, wow, pears, peaches, a little bit of cherries, not much because we're really pushing the growing area here for cherries.
And was that here locally?
Yeah, here in Wexford County.
We just had rhubarb pie last Sabbath after mm-hmm. dinner. Oh, it was so... Rhubarb pie is awesome, isn't it?
It sure is.
We used to have some uncles that used to always bring my wife. They would bring her a whole just armload of rhubarb, and then they would bring 10 pounds of flour and 10 pounds of sugar and a can of Crisco. I can't forget.
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah, they did. And I asked them, I says, well, what kind of pie do you like? And they said, hot or cold? Didn't matter to them.
Oh.
That went right over your head, Jelaine. Hot or cold?
Yeah, hot or cold.
You got it? Never mind. Moving right along here. Nobody loves my jokes anymore. I mean,
well, I was just saying, when you said that, you like apple pie, very warm, tastes good.
I don't think it matters to me. I don't think it matters to most folks as you go through here. Teresa, farmer's market. Mm-hmm. I always love going down there, and there's such a wide variety of different foods, you know, vegetables, flowers. I mean, you can get cut flowers, any kind that you pretty much want. And then obviously the fruits that are available in season. What do you suggest that people look for? Because most of those people are organic gardeners anymore, aren't they?
No, I wouldn't say that.
No?
Nope.
Okay, so don't take that for granted then.
Only if they're advertising, maybe?
They usually, when I go to farmers markets, nearly all of them who are doing something that you would call organic, if they're organic, they're going to have that certification out front and center because they want you to know. It's an advertising tool for them. A lot of people aren't certified organic, but they have chosen not to use the chemical pesticides or chemical fertilizer. And again, they'll usually have that out front and center on their stand, that no chemical fertilizers or no chemical pesticides. If they're not advertising what their growing practices are, ask them. They'll tell you.
And what are some great things? Now, we're taping this the second week in July. What are some great foods that are out there right now that people should really take advantage of and possibly even cut up and freeze for later on and in the winter because they're not as prevalent?
Well, here in Michigan, it is cherry season. And I know that's something I like to do is freeze cherries for the winter. Other things that we're winding up on strawberries. Blueberries are just starting. A lot of our vegetable crops are just starting to come in, our beans, our squashes. If somebody has a hoop house, they may even have tomatoes already. Our lettuces should be good.
There's no way to preserve lettuce, is there?
Not that I figured out.
Well, I know. I know. Somebody needs to figure that one out. That'd be a great thing.
Well, but the thing about it is you can grow lettuce about any place, can't you? Inside the house, as long as it's
friend,
got some light.
Year-round, probably.
A friend here in Cadillac who had a window box inside her house, and she always had some romaine lettuce growing in the window box inside her house. Yeah. So she had lettuce year-round.
Fresh lettuce, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And especially if you love salads. I know I do. With some of the situations I've run into with my health, it's really been a real blessing to me. And there's a lot of different ways that you can make it right now. And I just mentioned the farmer's market because it's so enjoyable just going down there. And everybody's talking about this or that and all the different... There is some really weird colored vegetables now.
There are. People try and capture their customer's eye by different colors. I'm not sure that the taste is always there. Of course, taste is very personal.
Wasn't there purple carrots?
There's purple carrots out there.
And I remember when I first saw them, I'm like, really? I mean, because you just think carrot, you're thinking orange.
Mm-hmm.
Purple carrot? You know.
There's purple cauliflower out there now, too.
Potatoes.
Purple green beans. I actually
purple
am a fan.
Purple green beans?
Yeah. It sounds like an oxymoron. But we raise a couple varieties of purple beans, and they're very tasty. When you cook them, they turn green.
Oh.
But they are purple out in the garden.
Is it like a dye? What I don't understand it. How do they do that? Do they have to breed it?
No. These are a lot of heritage vegetables that are Not necessarily. There are a lot of heritage varieties that come in these different colors.
Explain what heritage is, because maybe not everybody knows what that means.
Heritage is commonly taken to be varieties that were around prior to World War II. In other words, they weren't necessarily part of anybody's breeding program, but seeds that have been handed down through generations, family to family.
Teresa, I've heard and I've read both about these seed vaults of where mm-hmm. they try to keep seeds just in case natural disasters or different things, man-made disasters probably more so than anything. Do you know much about that at all that you can maybe share a little bit? I mean, do they try to protect all of these seeds so that we can continue to grow if there is one of these disasters?
There is an international seed vault way up in the Nordic country. I can't remember now if it's Sweden or Norway or Finland, but it's way
over
up,
there.
Way over there, far above the Arctic Circle, where they're trying to conserve the world's germplasm, different seed varieties, against a disaster, a real disaster. But, you know, even take that down several notches. Right here in the United States, we have one group called the Seed Savers Exchange, and their mission is to save heritage seed varieties. And they collect seeds from thousands of different people and propagate a lot of them and make them available to sell. And they have a farm out in Iowa, and you can go visit them, go to their store, or you can buy their seeds through their catalog. And it's a lot. They do only open pollinated heritage varieties. And so if you're interested in helping keep a lot of these open pollinated varieties around, you can do that. Or you might know somebody who has seed that they've saved from their great grandmother. We have a few varieties that we grow at our place that are not from my family, but from other people's families that we've saved ourselves for years and years now.
Is there any scientific documentation about that kind of food from those seeds is healthier or better for our bodies than all these chemical treated and
the hybrids?
Yeah, hybrids.
A hybrid, actually, no. In short,
I'm just wondering if
because sometimes the hybrids were bred specifically to have a higher vitamin A content or something like that. Okay. So that's too broad of a brush to try and paint a picture with. Just because it's hybrid doesn't mean it's either higher in nutrient content or lower in nutrient content.
Doesn't mean it's good or bad.
Right. It just means it was bred for a particular need. Mm-hmm. And that need might be nutrition. That need might be resistance to disease. That need might be a higher yield. And so you need to learn a little bit about that individual hybrid. Why, what is it, the thing that it's trying to accomplish?
Right. Well, I know there's a difference because, being on the farm, the different kinds of corn, because you get a better yield when you have a hybrid than if it's not hybrid.
You're talking about bushels per acre. They want to pump that up, right?
Yes.
Well, trying to feed the world, you need, more yield.
And growing conditions can affect yield. Yes. They can also affect how nutrient dense a particular food is. If you create a soil environment where all the nutrients that a crop has or needs, including micronutrients, are there, you're going to produce a crop that has more nutrients in it. And that doesn't matter whether it's hybrid or heirloom.
Teresa, it always excites me to watch you answer these questions. You have that bright-eyed look of excitement when you start talking about vegetables and compost and fruits and insects.
Well, our listeners know what you're talking about.
She does too, and I really appreciate that. Yeah. And folks, you want to stick around. This is the end of our second segment. We're going to be talking about the crop of the month, which is cucumbers. We'll be right back.